I'm Brian.
And I'm Reggie.
And this is R&B Talks.
Hello.
R&B Talks. Sorry.
Sometimes I have to sing.
You don't.
But
you,
I do.
You really don't.
It's in my soul.
You really don't.
So, Reginald, how's your brain this week?
Mush.
Nice. Mushy brain. I dig it. Mushy brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Mushy brain. Well, it's not so much of what I've been into. It's just I'm just done with the I'm just done.
I haven't watched anything political all week long.
I mean, that's like what I mean.
Turned it off.
Like it just got to the point where I was just and it's not what's it's because it's so this is what I mean. It's so obvious. Like you really have an issue if you see these things. The way the and especially the way CNN or like MSNBC reports it, there was I forgot what you know there was this what really put turned my brain and just said nope you're not doing this anymore was the there was some CNN headline about something and it was just this is how could you not see it for what it is, and the article was crap. So anyway, I just. I just shut it all off. I don't care. Like it's the same story every week anyway. Such and such is doing this, and such is divide is doing something else to divide this people, and such is looking for more money and wealth here, and then they're paying for this person to say this about this person, and yucka. It's just the same.
It's
rodeo, dude.
It is a. You know, I've given up on anything legacy media having common sense in it, right? Like it doesn't really, it's all but hurt emotions and lies because it's easier to believe a lie than to discover the truth, right? So, which is kind of a little bit will feed into what we're talking about today. But I turned it off the other day just because I was trying to find out more about a little bit more about the Russia, the talks. I was curious. I wanted to know more. So I'd done a ton of internet research and read a ton of articles. And then I turned on one of the legacy media networks and in about 11 seconds, it made me nauseous and I just turned it off. And I was like, I'm not watching it anymore. It's time to start talking about things that apply to people, you know, and things that will help people. And I don't think banging away at politics is helping anybody, right? Like, I don't think it's helping anything. I don't think it's building anything.
But again, it's like you see so much. So here's my thing with this, right? You see so much, and I think this is overwhelmingly kind of also to do with the mindset of the liberal sheepdog. Not even sheepdog. I shouldn't say sheepdog. Sheepdog's good.
Yeah. Sheepdogs are loyal and
just sheep. If they had tears and stuff, you know. Sheep with tears.
Shears.
It's – I remember what I was going to say now, bro. So I'm saying it's just
– Here's what it boils down to, Reggie.
Oh, yeah. What I was going to say.
Go.
Sorry.
Do it.
It just all goes down to the ideology of that kind of person who looks at something and has no – sense of looking past their own opinion or what it is. And we get criticized for that serving not that ideology of that very thing. Yet it's – why is it always the left that throws that out there in this hypocritical manner when all the other viewpoints that aren't that seem to be capable of looking in different directions? Except for far right or whatever. But I guess what I'm saying is like, it's just, I'm, you know, the people that prescribe to this and I had a really good one where I was, I really got under the skin of this one guy who I was then called a bunch of names instead of arguing, it was a bunch of names that I was dim-witted and I didn't belong in, which was funny because all you did was just admit that you couldn't say anything about the subject at hand.
That's why. And here's the thing. And I'm going to, all right, Reggie, I'm going to give the left the secret to success. I'm giving it away. I'm like the motivational speaker. I want to give you the secret to success.
Oh my gosh.
stop crying, stop pissing and moaning, stop telling me you're heartbroken, and start talking to me about facts. If you can literally have an educated discussion with me, I don't care. Look, man, we've all had bad and rough pasts, right? We've all gone through stuff. We've all had things that affect the way we think, the way we feel about things. But it doesn't take away the singular responsibility that when you take on a belief or a passion, the responsible thing to do when you take that on is to study it, find out the truth about it, and approach it from the angle of truth and the angle of facts.
Ah.
And the left, as you can see in everything that's gone on in the last 6 months, doesn't understand what the facts are.
They do, though.
That's just it, though. I don't think they do. Well, I think this is a legitimate contagion that infects and destroys minds.
I know what you mean.
And takes away their ability to be able to recognize fact from fiction.
The general public that subscribes to that ideology, yes, I think you're absolutely correct.
Yes.
I think the ringleaders, though, know exactly. Oh, I think they know.
Yeah, you're planting the seeds of
this. Oh, they know exactly what they're doing.
You're doing exactly. But my thing about it is this, and this is kind of what we're going to talk about today, but I'm going to approach what I said from a little bit different angle. We all have that small inner voice that when you're talking to somebody, it says, "Hey, dude, this is crap. None of this is right." I have never been able to shut that voice off. Like, I've never been able to. Like, growing up in the streets and doing all the stuff I did, I have a great radar for BS. And when all this emotional garbage is going on, and you know, bring back the deported gang member and blah, look, dude, you're arguing from a failed perspective. I got into a very heated discussion with someone earlier this week because they go, "Well, why doesn't he deserve to have his constitutional rights?" And I just looked at him and I said, "He doesn't have any. He's not a legal citizen of the United States. The only people that get a constitutional right are people that are legal citizens. That's what the Constitution is based on, is for the citizens of the United States. It's not based on giving illegal aliens constitutional rights."
Well, we're okay.
Here's, especially if you snuck in, right?
My whole thing with this dude is, why are they're so adamant about the Fourth and the 14th Amendment, but they're not about the First, the Second, or the Third, or the Fourth?
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Because it's the typical uneducated argument. I'm going to pick and choose what I want. I'm not going to talk about the facts. But that's what I'm talking about. And the thing about it is when I looked at the guy and told me this, he goes, "So you hate people?" And I was like, "No, I don't hate anybody. I just understand what the law is. And I don't let my emotions, and I don't let my personal experiences, and I don't let, you know, things that I might like or dislike distract me from the truth. I just don't. Like, it's not something I do. I don't have a desire to live in a lie. I just don't." And yes, there are certain things about our government and our state government and federal government I absolutely hate. But I choose to live here, and I choose to live under the law of the land. So by doing that, I have to also choose to follow those laws. And the thing about it is the way they see it is they're doing this very, I'm being a rebel and a bringer of change. No, you're being hateful and dissentful and
selective
and selective. And you're not using any common sense at all. And you think that's going to bring about change, and all you're doing is teaching a new generation how to be ignorant.
So, because I mean, this is the facts are this: all the Democratic presidents before Trump have done deportations without due process for every single freaking one.
Yeah.
Massive numbers of them.
Including Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Including Joe Biden didn't.
And mass illegal allowances for all these pardons and this and that and that. I mean, like, look, this is not, you've set the legal precedent there.
Yeah.
You've already said it. Trump's not doing anything that any other president has never done, except for do the right thing in some ways. But second of all, here's the other thing though, dude. Look how much money is being spent on this pandering and all this crap to do all this crap for this one MS-13 gang member.
Yeah. Who's going to fly in. The moment he flies and lands, they're going to arrest him and re-deport him back to El Salvador. Have you won? Have you won?
You've just wasted taxpayer money. Like, where was all these, you know, the very, you know, concerned senators and all that shit.
Constitutional rights.
Where when North Carolina was having all these problems. Where were they when Tennessee was underwater and all this, all these issues?
They were voting to take down statues and
they were
voting to allow illegal voting rights, and they were trying to, you know, it's very,
yeah. I expect the liberal government officials who follow this ideology to do just that.
Yeah.
I see them doing exactly what their ideology tells them to do.
Exactly.
What makes me freaking irritated to know about, and why my stance on this has increased tenfold, and why I speak differently and less compassionately towards these individuals, because it's the individual citizens' fault. And they are falling into this, and they're the ones who make all this stuff possible. Because I don't want to be, because here's, like we've said on this show, I don't look at any political party as the answer to anything.
Not at all.
I just vote for whoever follows the biblical principles that I live my life by the closest.
Yeah.
I don't care what party that is, but if whoever follows that, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So, in a way, that helps me be way more educated about everything, and helps me not see some party line stupid thing. But I'll tell you, I'll say this again. The left, I am animately, vehemently against. Period. If you say you're a left-wing nut job, guess what? I believe you're a left-wing nut job follower of the woke demonic death cult.
Here's the problem. I don't.
I do.
And you want to know why I don't?
Why?
Because if they truly believe in something, they would be able to defend it with common sense and civil discourse. Okay, so listen, if you go back to some of the Marxist leaders and the communist leaders in the past, I didn't believe what they said. I didn't agree with what they said, but they were educated on their stance and could debate that stance, right? Say what you want about Karl Marx, but Karl Marx had a capability of defending his position in an educated manner.
Well, he wrote it.
Yeah. You look at all of the past communist leaders. You look at Putin. Putin's not out there screaming at people. He can defend it intelligently, even though it's the wrong stance. Well, here's the problem in America. We have allowed, we've allowed non-civil discourse to go on for so long that there is a certain sect of people, and I call them a sect because they're like a cult. It's very cult-like behavior.
Woke demonic death cult.
Yeah. It's
woke demonic death cult.
It's very
woke demonic death cult.
Yes. It's very cult like. A great example is when they did the videos. They did like 20 different senators did the video, and they verbatim repeated the same thing on the video. That's cult like behavior. That's brainwashed cult like behavior. When Joe Biden won, you didn't see 20 Republicans go out and make a cultish weird thing, like, and the thing is this is what I really wish. I really wish a person on the left was actually reasonable, because if they were reasonable, I could sit down and have a conversation and say, hey, I don't believe this. You do believe this. Tell me what makes you believe this, and it not become a screaming, yelling, accusational, ridiculous. Because here's what stupid people do. You ready? Stupid people yell and scream and holler to cover up the fact that they're stupid. If you're intelligent and you can intelligently defend your position, then you don't need to scream and yell and holler. You can actually sit there and have a civil conversation back and forth. And that's why, again, we talked about this before. This is just out and out vicious, willful ignorance. I'm going to be willfully ignorant so that I don't have to do the work to defend my position.
Speaking of willfully ignorant.
Yeah.
I think it's about time that we woke up and said Islam is bad.
Yeah.
As a cultural ideology. I know we won't do that, but
I will.
And me too. But I'm saying, you know, I think we need to look at what's going on in like the UK as a great example of what they do and what they're doing. And a matter of fact, it's part of their playbook to lie to the infidel. It's actually written like that. Yeah. I forgot what the word is. It's terror something, but it's actually a thing for them to propagandize, saying they won't do this or that, or this, or they do. That's part of their religion. Right. But that's what they're doing. They're just infiltrating in a different way. I mean, you can hear people from like Saudi Arabia and their leadership talk about why that's not a problem for them, because they don't allow that.
And I'm not just going to pick on Islam. Any religion that calls for the death of everyone that doesn't agree with that religion, and that's the Quran does. I'm sorry, but it's not hard to find. You can go online and look at it. It talks about killing the infidel, and you're on the wrong road, man.
I mean, it's just, I don't want to get into it too much. I just want to bring that up. It's just another example of willful ignorance to not see that.
There's thousands of them, man. There's thousands.
Oh, sure. But you know, it's so idiotic, and it's on purpose. I mean, this is what it is. I mean, the discernment has just fled the public entirely. Yeah. Now there has been more, I would say, reassurance here lately for myself. I've been reading the book Imagine Heaven, which is like this, I forgot his name now, but he wrote this book about near-death experiences and what they've seen and the research behind it. And it's amazing. And it really brings you a lot of hope into what that is. I mean, for example, one lady was clinically dead. Like there's no brain activity. They called it whatever. So the out-of-body experience that a lot of people report, she was in the, you know, this, and she was outside of the hospital and she sees a shoe on the windowsill. Right.
Yeah.
And she describes it, the color. And it was this when she came back and she said, hey, you might want to get that. It might hurt something. Told the nurse this. Right.
Yeah.
Well, there was no way she could have known that shoe was there, because she'd never been to that part of the hospital.
Yeah.
She was still in the, she physical self that they said was dead, never left this area, yet she knew that shoe was out there on the windowsill, yeah. Right? People that have been completely blind from birth, when they have a near-death experience, all of a sudden they see things.
Yep.
And they come back and they're like, yeah, it's all, you know, all this stuff. And they can't describe colors because they don't have a reference point for that.
Yeah.
But they said, I think we saw, very colorful and all this stuff, but they can't describe that kind of thing. Anyway, there's all kinds of things like this. And we're talking neurosurgeons and other PhDs and doctors who have had all these things.
Absolutely.
Like, so I just want to, I'm bringing that up today just because it's just been a fantastic. I can't put it down, and I've been reading it a lot. I'm almost done with it. Matter of fact, over this week, just been plowing through it. At the same time, reading Unseen Realm, what I'm trying to get through, and all this stuff. But anyway, that's something for us to talk about at a later date. As far as that goes, okay. How can I put this? Would you define 15 pounds as heavy?
I will quote the great Frank Zane, one time Mr. Olympia, when heavy is all about the mentality. Frank Zane once said, I can take two 20-pound dumbbells and get a better workout than a guy working with the entire rack. So
that is true.
It also depends on heavy. Also depends on the action that you're using the weight with, right? Like you can't really, like if I pick up 15 pounds right now and I just hold it, no, I'm not going to feel like that's heavy. But if I'm swinging it repeatedly, that it's going to get heavy, because momentum itself is going to add. You're fighting gravity, you're fighting momentum, you're fighting all these things. So yes, I would say you could define 15 pounds as heavy.
I really didn't think it was that big a deal. to be fair. So I added a 15 pound mace into my tractor tire regime.
Yeah. Changed the game, didn't it?
Bro, the thing is, swinging a 15. Now, it's also long.
It's a good 3.5 feet long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, they make the handles longer.
And it's weighted oblong. Like it's yeah. All that weight's at one end, right?
Yeah. So the 5 pounds kind of short. Then the 10 pounds, like a 36 inch.
Yeah.
And then the 15 pounds, even a little bit, it's like 6 inches long.
And you know, they don't count the weight of the handle in that either. So the 15 is at the end. The weight of the handle is not counted. So you probably got 2 or 3, maybe 4 more pounds of weight on the handle. It's steel.
So, but it's interesting. Like, so I have the, so, I have the I guess you'd reps of the hits, right? Because I'm mm-hmm. like, well, I'm increasing my weight by 50%. I probably should decrease the reps by 50% just to see.
Until you can get back to doing those same reps that you were doing comfortably, yes.
Yeah, but in a circuit that I'm trying to do. So I'm trying to do a 30-minute circuit. So I'm trying to make that 30 minutes the most impactful. And I'm trying to figure that out, like what do I need to do in order to like make it have a real escalation and quick decel, right? Mm-hmm. And but man, you, especially when you, the thing about swinging that thing and you, when you're doing like, even like if you're swinging it from like a side perspective, it's that 5 pounds changes your entire core feeling.
Yes, it does.
When you're doing that. And especially when you do the overhand, right? Mm-hmm. So your forearms are now really doing a lot. But then when you bring it down and you're crunching that middle core. Well,
you're
core, also
intense. You're tensing your core up at impact to keep it steady. So, yeah, it's a lot of core activation.
It's really cool.
It's awesome.
But, yeah, that's freaking heavy, dude, to swing like that.
Yeah.
And especially if you're trying to go hard with it. So it's not like you're just saying, well, it's 15 pounds. Let me let this fall where it may. No, I mean, like a freaking
absolutely
dumbass. And you see the tire, you know, this 200 pound freaking tractor tire, like,
yeah, it doesn't want to move at all.
No, but it bounces like, you know, you'll hit it. And so the tire compresses, right? Mm-hmm. And then when it decompresses, you see the whole tire jump off the ground kind of thing, right? Just a little bit. It's crazy. Just a tad, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Also, I know you wouldn't know this, but did you know a wet tractor tire is heavier than a dry tractor tire?
Yes, it is.
I know you knew that.
Yeah.
I found that out.
You can add a good 15 to 20 pounds of weight to it once it's wet. Yeah.
No. Sucks. Oh, yeah. I mean, I knew that too, but like you just, like I said, during the workouts I've been doing, I'm doing extra for you, by the way, Brian. Thanks, just for you. But
well, you can stop doing the extra for me because I'm back at the gym now. So
this what's your view, bro. But how about you, Brian? anyway, that's been cool. But
it is. It's. I'm glad to hear that you're stepping it up. You're accelerating. That's a good thing, right?
I know. But so I'm looking at I got a doctor's form because I'm really trying to, I want to get off of the metformin and the Jardiance stuff.
Yeah.
So that I can.
Jardiance.
Well, it does inhibit muscle growth. And that's probably part of my problem here is that I've done so much over the past almost year now, but I feel a lot better and all this stuff, but like the as far as like muscle versus fat thing has not increased as much as it should because of these medications.
Yeah.
That's what the doctor said. Like, well, you're not.
Honestly, man, just truthfully, and this is, I've lost about 4 or 5 pounds where I wasn't working out. I lost some muscle. Honestly, man, you need to get into it. To really start burning fat and forcing your body to build muscle, you need to get to ketosis in any way you can. Now, whether that's carnivore, whether that's keto diet or whatever it is, I'm thinking about, you know, doing a full on carnivore for 90 days just to see. For me, that wouldn't be difficult, dude. You could put a steak in front of me and I could just eat the steak and be fine. Like that's, I love vegetables. Don't get me wrong. I like salad and green beans and carrots and broccoli. I love all that stuff. But, you know, you wouldn't hurt my feelings if you said, Brian, for the next 90 days, all you can eat is steak and chicken for every meal. I'd be like, okay. Protein shakes and stuff like that. It wouldn't hurt my feelings. So, but what you're feeling is your body changing. That's what you're feeling. And it sucks, man. I tell people all the time. I told a guy this the other day, and I think he was a little freaked out when I said it. I was like, he goes, well, getting in shape will be cool. I was like, no, it won't. It's going to be painful. You're going to be sore. It's going to take a long time. It's going to suck. It's like, but the results of all that torture and pain are worth it, because what it does is it steals your spirit, it steals your mind, and it steals your body, and it makes you a stronger person all around. And I was like, so, you know, embrace the pain, bro, because there's going to be some.
Yeah.
All this talk about motivation, it's just a lie. But motivation is a lie. Nobody. If I had Sam Sulik, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and every other famous fitness influencer in this room, and I looked at them all and said, are you motivated to go to the gym every day? The answer would be no. But I go anyway.
There are some days when you will feel like, man, I really want to get out and do whatever.
Like all week long. Like I was like, dude, I'm enjoying being back in the gym. I'm lifting. But I'm doing spin. I'm getting my cardio on. And then like today, that's what I felt like today.
No, the other day. So the other day it was storming, right? Yeah. Well, no, it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Friday. I'm sorry.
Pretty
Friday.
Sucky.
It was Friday. And I'm like, ugh. So I'm like, that's an excuse. Well, I'm not going out in the storm. That'd be kind of dumb. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But as soon as it stopped a little bit, and I just.
I guess I got to go hit the tire.
And
but
I did.
You did it.
I did. I got out there and I did it. And that's when it figures it would be worse that day, right? Because it's like, oh, now the tire's full of water.
Yeah.
And the whole tire's wet and it's muddy.
A lot of the moisture.
And so here I am. And then, you know, so that was awesome. And then of course, that was my second day with the 15 pound.
That might be my favorite thing. Mace. That was awesome.
Awesome. Well, the tire flip, I love the tire flip, dude.
Oh yeah. What people don't realize is, a tire flip works everything. Every single muscle in your body, so triceps, good. Shoulders, back, abs, core,
yeah,
quads, calves,
it's the whole thing, dude.
And if you flip it, I tell people all the time, they'll be like, oh, I could flip tires. I'll be like, oh, really? Why don't you go grab that 250-pound tractor tire over there, and I want you to flip it 10 times that way and then 10 times that way, and at the end tell me that you could just go and flip that tractor tire.
Well, you know what I'm thinking, though, man? I think I might leave out the side strikes completely and just do overhanded tire flips. That way I do more of the overhanded tire flips that work the whole body, maybe.
I wouldn't take those side hammers.
Well, you know what? I did one time when I had 20 minutes one day, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do overhand. And that actually was a harder workout than it was with the side.
The reason I talk about the side strikes is because every grown man that's past the age of 35 needs to work on rotational movement.
That's true.
And that is a fantastic rotational movement, is that side strike where you're firing on the obliques and you're spinning really hard and you're striking that tire. That's a very,
yeah. Well, I don't say, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I agree with that.
The older we get, the more core and the more rotation we should work on.
And it would do that. It is a more, let me clarify this. It's a more strenuous workout if you leave them out.
Yes. Because you're doing the highest impact strike that you can do is that overhead strike.
Yeah, and you end up doing more
because you're loading on the overhead strike and you're leaving it out. So you're probably nearly doubling the overhead strike amount.
Yeah, I mean that's what you end up doing. But if the rotational thing, which I agree with you, is probably important, it needs to stay in there.
Well, it's especially at our age, we're not young guys anymore, right? So and the older we get, the more rotational strength and the more core strength we lose. People all the time will go, Brian, you do core with every workout. Yes, I do, because my core strength is what keeps me balanced and keeps me stable. And you know, I see it all the time. Like, you'll go to a gym and you'll see a guy that's a pretty big guy, but he can't bench very much weight, can't squat very much weight, because he has no rotational or core strength. So he has no balance. So trying to throw up a lot of weight, a lot of that has to do with the stabilization of your core, arching your back, making sure everything's solid in the middle. And you'll meet these guys that don't have any of that strength. And when they don't have that strength, they can't get the movement right. And I've met guys that have been working out for 20 years that can't do one push-up because they have no core strength.
Well, and also too, like if you do squats are like the best workout ever.
Yeah.
They're also
squats and dips. If you just went in the gym 7 days a week and did 10 sets of squats and 10 sets of dips, you would never have to do anything else.
But the thing with the squats, let me, cause this is what I'll tell you when I was doing this for real.
Yeah.
I would suggest starting with a Smith machine.
Yes. And lighter weight.
Yeah.
And so your body, that's a shock to the body the first time you do squats.
Yeah. And I want to make this very clear too. When you're putting that bar across the, your top, what are the traps, right?
Yeah.
Not your neck.
Mm-hmm. Your traps.
Your traps. Make sure it goes on the tr- – because, you know, if at all possible, use a towel or something.
I tell I when I squat any at all, I use a bar pad.
Yeah. But anyway, about start with that. And then once you get that, your technique is, like, solid and you're breaking that 90-degree with your – you know, all that stuff. Then step the weight way down. Now go to just a bar.
Yeah.
An actual squat rack.
Yeah.
And then just try that with just the bar.
You know.
Then you start putting weight on that.
Yeah.
That's a total, that changes the dynamic of that squat.
Yeah.
Even though the Smith machine, I mean, look, you're still doing the same movement, but you're not, the balance stuff like you're talking about isn't there. But you when you add that into it, changes it completely. Is all I'm saying. It makes that squat just a freaking, that's a whole different animal really from a Smith machine rack squat from actually a free weight squat. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, that we got off track a little bit.
Okay. So subject today.
Subject
Reggie, is why do we choose the easy road?
We suck.
Oh yeah. Fair. Fair. But you know, I want to talk about this is as I look at our current generations and the current way of doing things, we just constantly seem to be looking for the easy way out, looking for no pain, all the gain, the shortcut. You know,
one really easy answer here though.
What's that?
It's a survival mechanism.
You think so?
Think about this. If you look at the animal kingdom, right, and you know that there's you see this everywhere, a lion, if they already see a kill down, it's already dead.
Yeah.
That somebody's already done, like a, in particular, like a hyena thing.
Yeah.
They won't go for the new kill. They'll just go for the one that's already there. Right. It's an easier opportunity. It's right there that they can access very quickly. Right. And you got to look at stuff like that. You know, it's like the easy way to get what you need, the quickest way there is kind of built into us to do that.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Was that built into us to do that? Because I feel like, you know, when the first caveman rolled out of the cave and bonked a saber-toothed tiger on the head and made a sandwich, I don't feel like he left the cave with like, I want to go find a dead, already dead saber-toothed lion. I feel like he left the cave and said, hey, I gotta go saber-toothed tiger. I gotta go get what I gotta
get. You just reminded me of a story, man. I gotta, so speaking of that, this, we'll get back to this just real quick. So a man was arrested because he killed a bear that was threatening his kids.
Okay.
And I don't remember where it is, but like a bear was going to attack his kids. And he killed the bear. And then authorities came and arrested this guy because he killed a bear.
Okay.
How ridiculous do you have to be to do that? But also, too, the responses, if you saw the responses to like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he killed the bear. What?
I'm killing the bear. Bear going to die.
And I did. Not only would I kill the bear if it was my kids, if it was your kids, I'd kill the bear too. And by the time the law enforcement people got there, I'd already be field dressing the bear.
Yeah.
Because, well, I just killed the bear, so I'm going to field dress it and eat it.
I'm just going to leave it.
Going in my freezer.
Yeah. Well, you know? I mean.
Come on now.
I don't understand. Like, the part of this that really kind of freaks me out is, I don't see the oncoming generations surviving hard times. And we're heading for hard times. We have been for a while. We're already in some degree of hard times as far as the way our country's running. So what kind of, what drives someone to become the vulture, not the eagle, right?
Well, like, okay. Let's think about this from the standpoint of our, how our lifestyles are these days.
Yeah.
Look what we, I mean, there's very few who don't have a, who don't live in a home. Yes, I know we have homeless. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, you know, the vast majority of Americans have a, live in a domicile of some sort.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you already have shelter, which yeah. usually includes running water, electricity. Mm-hmm. You have, everybody has a damn TV,
yep.
all this stuff. What if people do, you know, that isn't, get, you know, the, like there's not this, we don't have to work to live. In other words, we pretty much work for our luxuries, right? The our bare essentials are pretty much way covered by a lot of things.
Now, I'll be honest with you, and this is probably going to sound, I don't work for my luxuries. And the reason I say that is luxury to me means excess, right? Okay. I don't have excess. And if you meet most people, I mean, if you think about, like, we'll take most young men and, as an example, they're not interested in marriage or long-term relationships, which is the reason why pornography and all these things have skyrocketed, because that's the alternative, right? For that part of yourself that you need to handle. You're not interested in being married. You're not interested in, I am interested in maintaining what is my responsibility, which is my wife and my children and my home. And yes, do I don't have any hobbies. I go to the gym. I don't have any hobbies. I can't afford any hobbies. Like, I have two kids. They're that's my hobby, right? I got two kids that are doing their thing, and I'm not, I don't resent it at all. I want them to have a better existence than I did. Right. So, my theory on this is there has been a long-term, very intentional destruction of the motivational pillars that existed when I was coming up for this current situation. And I'll explain that in this. Number one, the nuclear family is under attack. Testosterone levels are down. Men don't see value in women like they saw value in women 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. All of these individual pillars that most men used to see as a necessity, they now see as a burden. Home ownership is falling down in the younger generation.
They're making it harder for you to own a home.
Well, they sure. are, but you can still own one.
Sure you can.
Because, but I mean, you have
why
to budget,
we choose to do it?
But you have to budget, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't, it seems to me like it's, I would rather just survive than thrive.
So, but even you, Brian, I mean, I would classify, like, you have a smartwatch. That's a luxury. You like, you drive a nicer car than just what'll get you there and back. That's a luxury. You have a couch. That's a luxury. You have a TV. That's a luxury.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? There's all kinds of.
I will not admit that I have amenities in my life that I have worked to have. Right.
Well, but all I'm saying is that we really are, our bare essentials to live aren't really what we think about that we need to, like, hustle for. Like, we are beyond most people. I'm not saying everybody, but you're not really, you know, you're going to be able to feed your family. You know, you're going to pay your bills. You know, that kind of thing. You know, you're going to be able to establish that. Right. Yeah. So you work for investments or savings or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, your kids don't just have, like, you know, and it's okay if they did. I'm not saying that, but like Salvation Army clothes and all that kind of stuff. And you know,
well, but we do, we shop at Goodwill.
I know
we do,
but that what I'm saying is though that that's not, you know, you take care of your family and they live really well.
Yes.
That's a luxury.
They live really well because of my motivation to give them the ability to do that.
Well, right. But I'm saying, but that's it's not like there's a lot of things that you have in your life that are not essential for your living.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Me, way guilty of that. I have a ton of crap that I don't need to live, but it's like stuff. Like my girls have stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and they will. I'm just going to spoil them like that. But so that's what I mean by we're focused on our luxury stuff, really.
Well,
in this culture,
but you know,
and we're very materialistic in this culture.
Yes, we are. We are a society of consumers for sure. Right. And a society that consumes, like we consume on a higher level.
We do just consuming.
But I also look at people who, you know, their answer to mental stress, like, dude, when I was growing up, you were just going to have mental stress and you need to get your shit together and deal with it. And nowadays it's, oh, my life is hard. Please medicate me. Or, oh, my life is hard. So I'm going to take a gummy every 4 hours that's full of THC to kind of numb me up. And, you know, there is no hardiness to this generation, right? Like this very quick, easy fix generation. Again, we all have baggage. We've all been through stuff, right? But why is it that, you know, I mean, let's just be honest. That stuff wasn't really prevalent until the 90s. And what I say that is I think the beginning of you know, the 90s, or actually the 80s and Gen X, was latchkey kids. Parents who were more concerned at that point about reliving their independence than actually taking care of. I was a latchkey kid. I had a key. I had to fix my own food when I got home. I didn't have parents at home that would do those things for me. My parents were divorced. My dad was off doing whatever he was doing. I was living with my mom, who was mentally ill, and she worked, but she was never home. So I was a latchkey kid. I had to essentially take care of myself. I mean, at 14 years old, I was fixing my own dinner. I was cooking on the stove. I was doing a lot of things that nowadays kids can't do or won't do. Which I think, and this is kind of a huge rabbit hole to crawl down, but I think it has a lot to do with the obesity epidemic. I think it has a lot to do with the, all these easy choices don't provide hardiness.
Okay, but the whole what you're talking about though is a lack of discipline.
Yeah, for sure.
That absolutely. What we're talking about is we've moved into the culture of like, oh, what makes you happy, not what makes you better.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it goes down, and we just talked about this, but it goes down to the conversation. People all the time will go, Brian, you know, why do you go to the gym as much as you go to the gym? It's for my mental health. It's for my physical health. It's to help me deal with stress. Because I know that I have to do it in a way that's healthy, because if I don't, I'm going to do it in a way that's unhealthy.
And
there's a discipline to that, right? You have to make those choices.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look, I think part of your, we're especially talking about what we focus on here as men.
Yeah.
Okay.
This particular situation, it's a gender neutral problem.
No, I get that. But men are made to move. We are made to be of service and move and do things.
Agreed.
Right? Our purpose is we have a work purpose.
Yes, I agree.
Now, some of it's less than others, but that's really what men are.
So we're built to be sacrificial.
Yeah, labor, bro.
Yeah. Honestly, if I wasn't married and didn't have kids, I would probably work for my comfort. I wouldn't work for... But I don't. And again, my wife listens to this. So I don't want her to think I'm, I love my family and I thrive on the responsibility of taking care of my family and doing my job and making sure that the bills are paid and that we can eat. And had to buy a weed eater today because I have 4 weed eaters that were all dead weed eaters. And because I work really hard, I could buy a weed eater. Right. So, I mean, I worry and concern about this narrow, this very wide and broad, dangerous road that everybody's trying to go down, because discipline is a narrow road. You know, the Bible says the way to hell is broad.
Well, it's also choosing what is. You can choose the easy way on some things,
yeah,
and that's really okay.
Yeah, because sometimes the easy, I mean, many times the best way to get from A to B is a straight line, right? Like, it's not, you know, you can go in a curve and you can make it harder.
Yeah.
Will you learn something from that? Yeah, probably.
Maybe.
But you probably just should have gone from A to B, right?
I mean, like, it's just, but that's what I mean. Like, you know, but there are a lot of things where it's like, how, and this is really where your introspective approach to who you are matters.
Yeah.
It's like, are you looking to see how you can be a better you tomorrow than you are today? And is whatever that this is that going to help you get there? Or are you just looking at like, well, man, I'm just, you know, I'm tired and this and that.
I think and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but biblically, I think we're called to be better tomorrow than we are today.
Well, definitely, because we're supposed to our continuous sanctification via molding and shaped over the entire lifetime of.
Well, also we're meant to know and understand more and give more and be stronger and more sacrificial and I think that's part of this. You know, part of the problem too is we seem to have this need to avoid discomfort more than we want to have what's easy. We just want to avoid discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I both have learned through many experiences in life that discomfort is a necessity in life, because it will do things for you that comfort will not. But I just, you know, I'm very concerned. Like, I have a very deep concern for our current generation. And, you know, a lot of people look at my kids. They work hard. They earn. And they're like, well, why do you let your kids do that? I don't let my kids do that. I raised them to want to do that. And I gave them the tools that they needed to be able to do that. And they, when the time came, when their capabilities were there, they asked me if they could, which is not a forceful thing. It's a thing of, hey, I'm going to be an example, first of all, and I'm also going to teach you what the tenets of being a good man is. And then I'm going to give you the ability to use those tenets to develop who you are. I worry that a lot of our parental, and I blame as much of this on parents as I do on kids. Kids are moldable from the time they're born to the time that their brains develop and they become adults. If you go and you look at a lot of these kids who are kind of free roaming and free living and doing all their things, they don't have very good examples at home. They've either got the disconnected parent who works constantly and is never there, or they have the parent that's kind of fast and loose with the rules and doesn't really require anything of them. And I feel like that's probably just as much part of the cause of what's going on, is the role of parent has changed. You know, the role of, you know, you look back when the divorce rate started to skyrocket back in the late 70s and early 80s, back when, you know, the feminism movement came along and women were empowered to be their best selves. And and you look at those things, and that's kind of when the whole, yeah, I'll be a parent, but I don't want to give up my freedom.
I mean, there's definitely a balance, and it depends on the kid and the individual about how you do things, but it's tough too. Cause like, I look at my own, I mean, I've worked my tail off to get where I'm at to be as comfortable as I am. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause I grew up not being comfortable. So it's like, well, one of the things I told myself, you know, when I was a teenager, I was like, I'm going to work my ass off until I can be as comfortable as I want to be.
Yeah, for sure.
Now where that's, where I am now, though, is I'm really comfortable now. And I do think this all the time, but, you know, maybe I shouldn't be so comfortable. But I think it wouldn't, because I know what it is to be uncomfortable. I've lived that. I mean, if I had to be that way again, I don't think it would be a, it would be hard, but it wouldn't be impossible, right? So I look at that to answer your question. Right now, the easy road for a lot of people is to make sure they pay their streaming services up to date because they got to watch that thing, you know, the binge watch, whatever it is this weekend, make sure that they got their NFL subscription because they don't, you know, they got to keep up with their fantasy football league and all this crap. That's
what's funny is the other day, Julie and I finished Yellowstone, got to the last episode of Yellowstone, which by the way, loved Yellowstone. It's a great show. But I looked at my wife and I said, you realize we're sitting here watching a show about working. We're worked very hard so that we could sit here and watch a show about people that work hard.
Yeah.
But, I believe that there is that we are missing something in this current generation.
Well, missing something in our youth.
Yes.
Okay. I think because there was, I can't remember where this was, Brian, but there was a philosopher or maybe a psychologist. I can't remember which one who said like, you know, when you're in your like maturity, you're in that early stage of adulthood, you're in your warrior phase where you're like, yeah. You know, that's when you're physically, you're at your peak. You're, you know, that's where, but you go into these different phases and like, you know, when you're at our age, you're kind of at that, you're getting into that sage phase where you're like, you know, you're coming out of the physical peak era and into that era where you're the wisdom behind the tribe kind of thing. Yeah. You know, that's where you're at. Now, you can argue, I think we got a lot of physical stuff left in us, Brian. I mean, yeah. I really do. But I think that at the stage of, you got to look at the stage of your life that you're in. But it starts as who we are, teaching the younger people how to get where we are so that you can be in where we are, right?
But don't you think that a lot of this has to do with the loss of respect for the elders?
Sure.
And what they have to teach?
Sure. Look who we prize on as influencers on social media stuff. There's not a lot of freaking old people out there doing social media influence. Who are they? They're these plastic, you know, people who live their life to look a certain way. That's their job.
Yeah.
You know, and all this. Even if you look at the Christian realm, dude, mm-hmm. there's not a lot. I mean, you have more, but well, like.
I mean, no offense, but Joyce Myers, man, she looks like the Joker.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd stay away from her anyway. But
she's a little scary looking. Like that whole, that Jack Nicholson Joker smile, that, no.
But there's, you know, but that's what I'm saying, man. I mean, like, you know, we're valuing the materialistic and the beauty of all these things and people instead of the substance of them and how you get that character involved in that substance. Not that it's bad.
Yeah.
But we're valuing that more than anything.
Do you think the lack of the church has something to do with
it? Sure,
that?
I do.
Do you think the church not being predominant in the home, in a lot of homes, has anything to do with that?
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, if you look at physical discipline, I mean, this is going to sound silly to say out loud, but I think about when Jesus and the apostles were wandering all over. Dude, it takes a lot of discipline to walk through 400 miles.
And not just do it then, but you keep doing that for like
years and years and years.
You have a missionary journey.
It takes a lot of takes a lot of discipline to eat the food that they ate, which was not necessarily nutritional and things like that. It takes a lot of discipline to live that lifestyle, right? But
I mean, you got to look at like when Jesus was at the end, right? When he was brought in to be arrested and all this stuff, mm-hmm. he would have been very, I mean, he came off of what was that? I mean, you're talking about a human Jesus who fasted and really lived a meekly living. I mean, well, really
he lived literally a clean lifestyle.
There
was no pollution in his lifestyle.
No, it's not like he didn't have abundance of anything.
No, he chose not to have abundance.
You know, so he wasn't, you know, he was a carpenter in his early life, right? Mm-hmm. Which he probably at that time when he was growing up being a carpenter until he was when he started on his ministry.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was a pretty fit you know,
strong dude,
strong guy doing carpentry stuff, because I mean, all that crap. And then, so then he goes into his ministry and it's nothing but walk here, eat whatever is presented to you,
eat, scrap together, so whatever you can do.
And then you're going to fast on top of that, you know, like, this is part, you know, like fasting for like that 40 days and mm-hmm. stuff and doing all that and getting tempted. And, but you don't think that was fit. Like he must've came out of there looking like hell. Yeah. Right. And so by the time he gets to that crucifixion, man, he's
weathered.
I mean, you know, he's lived it. And, yeah. and that's the thing. Like we have all these pictures of like these, especially Jesus, where they show this different kind of, but he wouldn't have been that, you know, by his life. And I even think the Shroud of Turin actually gives a pretty good glimpse of that. Cause that's not a big man.
Yeah.
You can see he was tall.
Yeah.
Not overly so, but I mean, but he doesn't look like he was, you know, like this muscle bound dude either. I mean, yeah. Right. Anyway, so what my point being is that our example that we see in Christ shows that the easy road was rarely, if any, taken at all.
Yeah. Was chosen not to be taken.
Oh, yeah.
It was not taken just because, oh, I couldn't see it. He chose to take the hard road.
Yeah. And so the question we have to ask today, like, and I think this is where I've been thinking about this on and off and on and off for the last like freaking 10 years, I guess. But it's like, where am I choosing the easy road? What am I doing? And I have to ask myself that. And I don't even know the answer to that sometimes. Because it's like because of the way our culture is and the way how we, our work weeks are done and all these things. It's like, well, it's really confusing if you think about it, like how we're supposed to live. And like, you're supposed to live, we have to live in our culture. Yeah. Right. But we're not of that culture.
Well, we have to live in it, not as it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. It's something that we all should have to answer your question, kind of, sort of, is to, as a Christian man or woman, we should ask ourselves, how are we living today? Mm-hmm. I mean, is what can I do today to make me more like Christ than yesterday?
Yes.
Is this the easy road, or is there a road I should be on that might be more difficult? You know, and I guess that actually started my whole thing last year with the chopping wood and everything else. I mean, it was like, you know.
Well, and you know my position on this. I mean, I believe that the first temple we're given by God is our bodies, right? And that temple is that the gift that he gives us. And, you know, we that's why I'm so happy for you finding this, because that's taking care of the temple, right? If I keep my body strong, then my mind will stay strong, my spirit will stay strong, and I'm less likely to be affected by those who attack what I believe. I know it sounds kind of hokey, but it really has proven to be true, right? When I was heavier, 320 pounds, and couldn't move as well and didn't feel good, I wasn't motivated. I didn't feel like I needed to do. But now I feel strong and not, you know, I mean, I was just in a car accident and had major reconstructive surgery on my left eye. How many people, you know, would be back up and running 2 weeks after that? Because I take care of my physicality is important to me, not because I'm trying to intimidate anybody. That doesn't have anything to do with it. It's just important to me because staying strong and healthy helps me recover when there are times like I'm having right now. And I will admit this week's been a struggle because I've been exhausted because I'm still in recovery, right? But I'm still going back to the gym and I'm still trying to eat healthy and I'm still trying to not make mistakes and do the things and keep that discipline going, right? So
it's not just that though, too. You are acknowledging that every single time you go to do something physical, that it's not going to be necessarily a pleasant experience.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, your aim is to make it really unpleasant.
Yeah. You gotta break it down to
it's
build it up.
Intentionally that way.
There's gonna be pain. It just is.
That, as you said, and I'll use myself, not only is it intentional to be like, nope, I'd much rather go sit in my chair and watch some show or something, or watch Lord of the Rings for the, you know, thousandth time. But I'll go outside. It doesn't take long, 30 minutes. Let me take 30 minutes of my day to just beat the living snot out of this tire, to really push myself physically to just to do it. And it's by like, you know, you're talking the 20 minute mark. If I'm on a 30 minute track, by the 20 minute mark, I'm like, man, I'm pretty much done. I'm so done. But let's do
10 more minutes.
Let's do 10 more minutes.
Yeah.
See how much I can do. But without that 10 more minutes, that's deciding not to go the easy way.
Well, and
that's what I mean. That's a conscious decision.
When I'm working with somebody young at the gym, and I'll say, we're going to do a set of 12. And we'll do 12, and I'll go one more. And they'll do one more. And then I'll go one more. And then they do that 14th rep, and it's difficult. And then they go up, and you see them start to get that look of relief on their face. And I'm like, we're going to do one more. It's the willingness to feel the burn, the pain, the difficulty, the discomfort that makes you stronger. Right. Like that's everyday life. I mean,
but this applies to more than just this too.
Yeah.
We're using this as an example.
Yeah. Because I'm talking about everyday life. I'm talking about sometimes I've got to talk. If I make a mistake, it's difficult at times to admit when you've made a mistake, but there's a discipline and a growth that comes from admitting that.
Even in finances.
Right.
But like if you look at like Bill Gates or like the Steve Jobs or whatever, when they started these companies or whatever, they didn't live very comfortably.
No, they did not.
And they grinded it out until it became, and if they wouldn't have took that road less traveled, wouldn't have made the success they had, right?
Yeah.
And I look at it in my own career. Like, I mean, if I didn't work for a consulting gig where I was doing 16 hours a day and doing all this other stuff, I wouldn't have been able to make it to where I'm at now, even though I think corporate America is a shit show. Not that I don't. I'm not grateful. I'm very grateful for my job. Don't get me wrong, but I digress. But I mean, it's a lot of things, man. Like how can you be more, generous if you don't give sacrificially? Yeah. How can you be more loving if you don't love sacrificially, kind of thing? I mean, like these are small things you can do all day long to stay away from that easy road, to take the hard road. Right.
Yeah.
And that's really what we are supposed – that's what we're called to do. How can we do that? Was 6 years of my freaking life dedicated to getting an apologetics degree comfortable? No. That was a choice. I had to either – I could choose. I didn't need it. I could have chosen to sit there and spend not that much time into textbooks and writing and all that kind of stuff and research and all that. I could have done all kinds of things. You know, with that, especially even, you know, my wife was, you know, this is where you got to have your wife, man. This is where she's got to be the one for you who says, yeah, you can do that. You should do that. I'm there for you. And she's the one who doesn't nag you about all this other stuff that you need to do, because she knows you're doing this for a reason.
Yeah.
And this is why young people, it's so important to be ambitious about making you the best you can be, and make those qualities of your individual self reflect the biblical idea of a person, which means honor, integrity, sacrifice, you know, love, compassion, all these things. You can't get there without taking that windy road that's less traveled. I mean, that applies to everything. And then find a woman who wants to do that with you.
Yeah. Find a woman that's strong, that's as strong as you are in the way that a woman in that support role, right?
Like, yeah. And then you raise your kids like that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've created a generational thing.
Yeah.
And
be unapologetic in your willingness to take the longer road.
Yeah.
I find a lot of times when they do choose the longer road, they feel like they need to apologize for making that choice. Absolutely not. you're doing what's best for you. You know, people all the time say, Brian, what do you recommend if I'm trying to get in shape? You need to take this, you need to take 6 months and work on you. And I mean, work on you hard. And when I say in shape, I don't just mean physically in shape. Go find something spiritual. Work on your mental, work on your emotional health, right? Don't apologize for doing those things, because those are the things that'll bring you the reward you're looking for. Right. And that's where I think, you know, we need to be more involved in talking to them about the fact that there is a bigger and better reward in those things. Right. I have always felt more rewarded and stronger at the end of something difficult, than I did at the end of something easy.
Oh yeah.
I feel a certain level of guilt when something's super easy and I'm like, well, that wasn't very challenging, right? Like how did that grow me if it wasn't challenging?
Yeah. I mean, be intentional about your rest being as part of your growth as well.
Yeah.
Because and know there's a time and a place to go. There is a way you can go too far.
Yeah.
And that could apply to physical or emotional or anything else.
Yeah. Even spiritual.
Oh yeah.
There are ways that you can, you'll think you're on track, but you're actually damaging your spiritual health.
Yeah. I mean, there's that. So, it's just about being intentional about who you are and where you want to go. And disregard that easy road as much as possible.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, there are some ways. I mean, and this is why your kids have got to know that it's not the easy road that they want to go down either.
Well, and let me also say this. Sometimes you'll do the studying and you'll do the research and you'll figure out that the easy road is the way you need to go. But that's going to be less often.
But I think that's not the same thing though, right? I think that's just saying here's because there's an easy road that gives you a shortcut. We're talking about not taking shortcuts, really, right?
Yeah, don't take shortcuts. I mean,
there's certain things. That's what I mean. Like easy, hard work. It's just about really just focusing on being intentional about who you are and where you're going. That's really it.
Yeah, for sure.
Being willing to be uncomfortable for a while to have bigger successes later on.
Absolutely.
You know, but whether it be physical, emotional, finances, whatever. I mean, that's really what it's about. Now, you know, what I've been telling my son a lot is like, dude, while you're young, you know, bust your, just do it. Like really, really work hard.
Yeah. Deny yourself things to better yourself.
Yeah. Better. Like really put effort into this is your time. You're never going to be stronger than you are now. You're never going to be more capable than you are now. Do what takes that capability, what takes that strength, what does that do it, use it now. Mm-hmm. Don't wait. And because you'll find out later on, you'd be like, man, I could have done more. And it doesn't matter how much you do now. You're going to still say that later on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you just want to be able to not say it as much.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah. So this comes back to the whole thing, man. It's just about, look, open your Bible, read it, read your Bible.
Yep.
And he'll put you on the path that you should be on.
Full of stories about people that had to take the hard road.
I mean,
right?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, they're just read a daggone thing. It'll talk to you.
It'll give you the information you need. Yeah,
it will indeed. I think that's we are approaching the end of our show.
I think we are. Anything else, Mr. Reginald, sir?
Oh, there's many. Many, many things.
Yes, but we have many, many, many more episodes to cover those things, my friend. And we don't want to rabbit trail at this point.
No, we did. I will say, on a personal note, my girls went to a Taekwondo tournament yesterday. That was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I got to actually go since we were busy doing other things. That was fun. The girls did really well.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Okay. I know I might get in trouble for this, but I'll just say it. It's interesting being at some kind of like Taekwondo thing. And then you look around and there's a lot of heavy set people.
Mm-hmm.
That to me seems a little, backwards, really. Mm. Just saying, I don't really expect that when I go to see something like that. If you're supposed to be like a 6-degree black belt, shouldn't you be in shape?
Fair enough.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Just I'm no one to talk here. When I was doing stuff, I didn't know. You would have never. When I was in fighting shape, I was would never worked.
So I'm pretty much in fighting shape now, and
it's just interesting. I just was not put off by it, but just like
it's strange. It's strange to walk into a place where you think you're going to see like the pinnacles of health and athleticism, and you're like, no, that's not what I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But also, maybe that person's on the beginning of their journey, right? Like,
I'm talking people that have been doing it and have black belt.
One of your problems you have too is there's a comfort zone. Even in any sport, you're going to get to it. That's why I tell people all the time, don't set goals. And the example I use is if a soccer player is running down the field and he wants to get that goal. Once you kick the goal, what are you going to do? You set markers. I want to get to this point, because what happens when you set a marker, that's one hurdle in the race, right? So set markers. And once you hit that marker, set the next marker, right? My goal is to do this. Well, when you get to your goal, you're going to let off the gas. Set markers.
Well, you got to keep moving the marker.
Milestones.
I mean, that's what most top elite athletes do. Yeah. They have a marker, but they keep moving the marker. Yeah,
but once they hit that marker, they push it out further.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, now that I can do this awesome thing I wanted to do, now I want to do this awesome thing I wanted to do, right?
Until you get to a point where it's like, I need to maintain this because now I've reached the age where I can't excel.
I also hate to be this guy, but I'm going to bring up Michael Jordan. You never saw that man let off the gas.
No.
I mean, even when he left basketball and went to play baseball, if you hear the guys talk about he was there at the batting cage before anybody, long after everyone else had left, like even though he was not a great baseball player, he was going to put in the effort like he was a great baseball player. And then to walk out of baseball and back into basketball and after one season go back to winning world championships, that's because that guy never let off the gas. You know, so I get where you're coming from, man.
It was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and plus too, the way they do those tournaments
they're long.
Well, it's just weird to me, the sparring thing.
Yeah.
And like you only got a little hit box that you can do. Yeah. Like it seems that's just, I don't see the point. You know, it's supposed to your technique and everything, but like, I don't know. They're not wearing pads or anything like that either. So like, you know, this one little girl she got kicked right in the face. Cause I mean, of course people are going
to
do that or whatever, but it's like, you know, I don't know. It just seems weird to me. That's all I'll say. But it was fun. Let me say that.
Interesting to see.
I'm glad my girls participated.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. That was pretty cool. But yeah, I don't know. It was just weird.
Yeah.
It was weird.
For sure.
We're R&B Talks.
I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.